even more treacherous, and the winding gorge cut by eons of wind and rain prevented any visibility beyond 30 or 40 yards. Jake slowed her pace, proceeding cautiously. She kept Bunker close and scanned the area through its eyes as well as her own. 20 paces ahead, a deliverer popped up from behind a cluster of boulders, his launcher spewing fire and flame. The wild shot sent the rocket flying harmlessly over Jake's head and past the rim of the canyon, but the surprise made her duck for cover before she realized neither she nor the ironclad were in danger of being hit. The deliverer dropped his launcher and hastened deeper into the canyon. Jake's fired her hand cannon at his back, but the shot was wide, and the fanatic was out of sight before she could load another. She gave chase without hesitation, reloading her pistol as she ran. She focused on the ironclad, running it at full steam by her side, heedless of the uneven terrain. In her haste to hunt down her attacker, she completely failed to notice she had charged right into an ambush. Fire bombs detonated in front of her before she spotted the white-robed fanatics that had sprung up on either side of the canyon's rim. A dozen, maybe more, lobbed flaming spheres of explosive liquid into the gorge, each sphere blossoming into an instant bonfire on impact. A clay vessel exploded over the armored hull of Bunker, bathing it in a fiery blaze and showering Jake's with burning shards of shrapnel and searing oil. Instinctively, she focused on her Warcaster armor, revving the arcane turbine on her back to overboost her power field. When another bomb detonated at her feet, she felt the intense heat of the blast, but the flames and shrapnel washed harmlessly over the blue shroud of arcane energy that flickered around her. She fired a shot from her hand cannon, grazing a zealot across his shoulder. Far from lethal, the shot was still enough to cause the fanatic to drop the bomb at his feet, which immediately detonated, engulfing him in its flame. Jake's crouched behind the ironclad as she hurried to shove another round in the hand cannon, but the sheer number of adversaries had her at a severe disadvantage. With no ranged weapons, Bunker was good for little more than a shield, and with only a cumbersome single-shot firearm of her own, she'd be swimming in flaming oil before she could possibly neutralize half her ambushers.
"Smoke!"
she heard a familiar voice suddenly yell over another round of fiery explosions. Glancing back, she saw Hollings charging the squad into the canyon. An instant later, the pop-pop-pop of smoke grenades erupted around her, quickly filling the canyon with a thick white haze that completely obscured anything more than a few feet away. The smoke was of questionable protection, though. The bomb-throwing zealots relied little on accuracy.
"Fall back!"
she ordered, as another round of bombs exploded through the gorge.
"Take cover!"
One trencher howled, singed by the splattering flames as the squad backed away from their assailants, feeling their way over the uneven ground. A blue blur brushed past her elbow, and Jake's could just make out Whisker, his woolen coat buttoned tightly up to his chin. Even in the haze, his tinted goggles gleamed, but his stark white mop of hair blended into the smoke.
"Excuse my conduct, Lieutenant,"
he spoke with a tick, as if constantly experiencing a mild electric shock,
"but I'm struck with the notion that this is the perfect atmosphere to demonstrate my brilliance."
Jake's blinked, her mind balking at the man's puns. She'd heard the storm callers were odd, but she hadn't yet experienced their unique peculiarity.
"Brilliance?"
she asked anxiously, still in retreat.
"Positively,"
he said, grinning widely. He seemed to interpret her response as some sort of approval.
"Ahem,"
he added, tapping his goggles, until Jake's realized he was suggesting she don her own. Baffled, she covered her eyes with her protective lenses, and when she looked back again, Whisker was nowhere to be seen. A moment later, the haze flashed like the interior of a thundercloud, illuminated by a streak of lightning that stabbed from the sky to the canyon's edge with a crackling hiss. An arrested wail proved the bolt had found its mark. The bone-crunching thump and explosion of flame that followed confirmed its effectiveness. Tech specialist, first class, Armin Whisker appeared to be as precise with his electrical strikes as Wally was with his rifle. She couldn't see him, but Jake's could hear Whisker's mechanical lightning rod charging up to call another strike. Overhead, a zealot priest chanted in Caspian, the ancient tongue, inciting the fury of Menoth's followers. Firebombs fell around Jake's squad, scorching the ground and setting the sparse brush ablaze. After a second lightning strike found its mark, shouts and movement sounded above. Dislodged by hasty footsteps, the rocks from the steep walls of the gorge began to crumble and slide into the basin below. The zealots were descending into the canyon. Just then, Whiskers streaked past her in retreat.
"Sorry to bolt!"
Jake's had only a moment to gape at the strange man before she heard a mob of footsteps pounding toward her, carrying bellowed promises of the wrath and vengeance the Creator would visit upon Signar.
"Your command, ma'am!"
Holling shouted. This was what she'd hoped so desperately to avoid, the burden of her responsibility to keep these soldiers alive. Though she was angry Hollings hadn't followed her orders, she knew that if he had, she'd already be dead and the squad would carry on their mission anyway.
"Ready bayonets!"
she called behind her as she exchanged her hand cannon for her dueling dagger.
"Thunder follows lightning!"
a trencher crowed in response. Jake's couldn't see who it was, but the motto was quickly echoed by nearly every soldier in the squad. If these men feared for their fate more than she did, they gave no reason to believe it. Conserving her focus, she mentally urged her ironclad forward while searching the haze through its eyes. As the smoke began to lift, silhouettes of the approaching zealots became more visible with every step they took toward her. She spurred Bunker forward, charging his hammer with her energy. At the last moment, the ironclad swung the weapon in a wide arc. The spiked head connected with the zealot, splintering every rib in his chest as it lifted him off the ground and sent him soaring over the heads of his fellow fanatics. A focus took from Bunker's right arm clotheslined another Mennite, expelling the life from his body before he hit the ground.
"Skirmish formation!"
Jake shouted as she took off at a run. Moving along the wall of the canyon, she skirted past the charging zealots while carefully keeping Bunker within her effective control range. She could hear Holling shouting orders to his section over the screech of steel bayonets piercing chainmail shirts. And somewhere within the mob of zealots, the priest continued his chant, inspiring a rage among the fanatics that compensated for their lack of combat training and physical conditioning. Sprinting the width of the rocky pass, Jake's positioned herself behind the mob of billowing linen and flailing clubs. At their center, she spotted the priest. Her eyes flashed, and she could see the ironclad's eyes answer as it deflected the relentless attacks of the zealots. She charged forward and spurred Bunker straight toward her. Jake scythed through the throng of fanatics with flashing blades as the ironclad trampled them under its feet. Together, they crushed a half dozen zealots like a vicious vice until only the priest stood between them.
"I curse you in the name of Menoth, you who have forsaken your creator,"
he just managed to say before joining his comrades in death. Jake's felt the tug on the edge of her consciousness before she was aware of the weight pulling on the chain at her waist. It had been a week since she was last yanked off her feet, and the unseen bond between her and the ironclad had become far more present to her senses than the chain had ever been. Worcester and Warjack moved in perfect synergy, maneuvering around the practice ring with an agility and grace that Jake's could previously have achieved only when fighting on her own. The chain posed no impediment. She stepped effortlessly over and around it as she executed precision attacks against the centurion. Her focus was flawless as she increased the power and accuracy of Bunker's assault on the lancer. Punctuating a seamlessly fluid combination of attacks, the ironclad clamped its fist around the arm of the lancer and flung it through the air to crash directly into the centurion. Jake's calculated the distance to the heap of sprawling warjacks, then divided her focus between her own attacks and the ironclad in preparation for a two-pronged finishing move. From nowhere, Sturgis appeared in the center of the arena, transported in a flash of mystical runes from his position on the sidelines. Without a word, he launched a series of attacks at Jake's, battling her backward with the twin blades of his mechanical staff.
"Commander!" she shouted,
parrying his flashing blades. "What are you doing?" He didn't answer, but only continued to come at her, driving her away from the center of the ring. As Jake struggled to puzzle out the unexpected change in sparring protocol while still defending herself, the Centurion and the Lancer regained their feet and advanced on Bunker. Jake's could see the flash in Sturgis's eyes as he focused on his warjacks. The powerful, precise blows they landed only confirmed his direction over their attacks. Inch by inch, link by link, Bunker and Jake's were pushed apart. She fought with every ounce of her will to close the distance between them, but the assault from the Centurion and Lancer continued to drive the ironclad backward. The chain, pulled taut at maximum extension, towed her forward into Sturgis's whirling blades. She stiffened her stance, feet sliding over the pavers as she battled his jabs and slashes aside. She refused to lose her balance or break her focus. Seeing simultaneously through Bunker's eyes and her own, she divided her focus, preparing for a counterattack that would bring them closer together. Then, fainting with a thrust toward her face, Sturgis spun on his heel and sliced his blade through the tightly drawn chain. The recoil sent Jake's and the ironclad reeling in opposite directions, their effective bonds severed as quickly as Sturgis had severed the iron links. Without Jake's guidance, Bunker swung clumsily at its two opponents. They were under Sturgis's command and were well within his much greater control area. Blue energy rippled over their armored carapaces as together they charged, beating the outgunned ironclad to the ground with brutal thrusts and slashes from their spears. Bunker battled to regain its feet, but the Centurion and the Lancer were merciless in their attacks, continuing to batter the warjack long after it had been pushed outside the practice ring. Jake's rushed forward, desperate to reestablish control of her ironclad, but Sturgis blocked her path with his bladed staff.
"I don't understand," she shouted. "Why are you doing this?"
Stone-faced, Sturgis offered no answer but only held her at bay as she watched the ironclad fall under the avalanche of blows. Finally able to resist no more, the ironclad collapsed with a mournful, metallic groan. Jake's fell to her knees in defeat.
"Bunker!"
she cried out, her voice trailing off even as the flames within the ironclad's furnace expired. She gritted her teeth in frustration. Against her will, tears welled and blurred her vision. She angrily blinked them away and demanded, "Why?"
"You are the engine that drives a powerful machine, one that only functions when all its components work in harmony, and you have learned to operate the machine well."
Sturgis mentally called the Centurion and the Lancer back to the center of the practice ring, but Bunker remained motionless, sprawled across the pavers.
"Until these last few weeks, you felt you were stronger alone. But now you've learned what it means to be a warcaster, that the bond you share with the warjacks multiplies your strength exponentially."
"I already understood that," she said through clenched teeth, "so I don't know why you had to go and scrap it."
"You needed to understand that although you are weaker without the warjacks, they are powerless without you. Remember this, and let nothing ever come between you again."
"You defied my direct orders, Sergeant!"
Holling stared straight ahead, his doughy body at rigid attention as Jake's yelled into his ear. Out of respect, she had walked him away from the other men before dressing him down, but she knew the entire squad would receive her message in short order. Whether his dereliction of her command had saved her life or not, she couldn't allow the impression that she would allow disobedience.
"Honest, ma'am, we only come a-running when we heard your signal."
Unblinking, he delivered his explanation with every ounce of deference he would use to speak to the Army's most decorated general. But Jake's knew he was lying.
"What signal?" she demanded.
He took one too many breaths before answering, a clear indication that he was covering.
"The signal you said to be ready for, ma'am."
He winced, silently cursing himself for not having a better explanation. She could tell. In truth, Jake's wasn't angry at all. Though this was not as exhilarating as communing with the cortex of a warjack, she was nonetheless forging a bond. She backed off,
giving him some breathing room and softening her tone.
You're lucky no one was killed.
Understood, ma'am. I take full responsibility for my actions, he said, showing no sign of relaxing. Permission to speak, Lieutenant? He asked when Jakes didn't fill the silence.
She glanced sideways at him before turning away to conceal the smile curling the corner of her mouth. She was quickly coming to like the sergeant, and was amused that a man could be insubordinate, consummately professional, and charitable all at once. Staring into the maze of intersecting ravines, she absently kicked a stone over the edge of a low cliff. Bunker had run the last of the deliverers right over the edge of the jagged escarpment here, and Jakes could see the broken bodies draped over the unforgiving rocks below.
Go ahead.
Hollings finally let his shoulders slump, allowing the starched military presentation of a hardened soldier to fall away. Jakes heard the words of a man speaking from his heart.
This whole war would be over, for I could name every reason to love our great nation of Signar. But at the top of my list is that me and every one of the men and women fighting for our king done so by volunteering. Them Reds don't. They're called by their empress. The Candles gotta go by their god. And woe to the poor sod who ends up serving the Crixians. He's forced to fight even after he should be cold in the ground.
She turned to him and pointed at her left pauldron. You do know these wings on my shoulder mean I spent 2 years in the academy, don't you, Sergeant? I'm familiar with those other armies.
Hollings cleared his throat. No disrespect to your station, ma'am. Point is, them lads over yonder knows the stakes and is ready to face whatever bloody bastard tries to take a piece out of Signar. Every one of them made a choice out of love for this country, and they done it without having any special gift such as yourself.
This time, Jakes took a moment to answer. I wish I had such courage, she said quietly, eyes on the ground.
Hollings grinned, raising his chin. Ma'am, that's what you got us for.
His words comforted her more than she could have ever expected. She searched for a way to acknowledge his message, to thank him for the adjustment in her perspective. But all she could manage was a quick nod before a trencher yelled suddenly from his lookout atop a mound of boulders.
Colossal!
Bunker's head snapped up, his senses going into full alert. Spinning on her heel, Jakes looked out over the crag to see what looked like a massive pair of golden pipe organs rising over a ridge. A moment later, the two unmistakable rocket pods of a Judicator came into view. 3 times as tall as her ironclad and 10 times as heavy, the Judicator stomped through the canyon like a walking fortress.
Them deliverers was a ruse, ma'am,
Hollings shouted, pointing beyond the Judicator at the mass of Protectorate fighters following behind it. Jakes was appalled. They sacrificed those men to mask their reserves. She crept to the edge of the cliff, trying to get a clear view of the oncoming reinforcements.
They plan to march that thing right up our rear,
Hollings said gravely. Which means there's another warcaster down there, she added. A bay of covered ports on one of the Judicator's rocket pods opened, unleashing a salvo of rockets directly at Jakes.
Sergeant!
She cried, pushing him ahead of her as she turned to flee from the cliff's edge. But she was too slow to make her escape. The rockets detonated on the rocky wall of the cliff, instantly turning the ground beneath her feet to rubble. Hollings stumbled forward onto solid ground as the avalanche of rock swept Jakes and the ironclad into the gorge below. Sharp boulders rushed up at her from the floor of the canyon. Instinctively, she focused on her warcaster armor to boost the protective field surrounding her, but the wind was still knocked out of her as she bounced off a rock and tumbled toward the broken earth at the base of the cliff. The moment before impact, Jakes was struck with that dreaded sensation of having her head dunked underwater. Her bond with Bunker had been stretched too thin, and she couldn't see where the ironclad had ended up. Clambering out from beneath the landslide of jagged stone, she searched wildly for the Jack, but among the massive boulders could neither see it nor sense his presence. Then the screech of hydraulics approached, and the earth shook underneath Jakes. Peeking around the boulder, Jake spotted the Judicator stomping toward her.
She felt the blast of heat as twin plumes of fire erupted from the colossal's chest-mounted flamethrowers, turning the scrubby foliage before it to ash. Beyond the huge warjack rose the riled voices of zealots, searching her out. Cut off from her squad with no sign of her ironclad, Jakes did the only thing she could and fled. Despite the vastness of Fort Falk, its massive population of garrisoned troops and support personnel made privacy a luxury in short supply. For the first 3 weeks after she had arrived, Jakes had devoted what little personal time she was allowed to seeking out some small corner of refuge from the endless clamor of wartime enterprise that filled the fortress. She had been rewarded with the discovery of a little-used rampart along the outer curtain's west wall. It was a short stretch of battlement between two turrets, where there was little reason for anyone to cross unless the fort was under siege. From here, Jakes could look out on the expanse of scattered farmlands, largely untouched by the war so far, and experience a moment of solitude impossible to find even in her own quarters. Religious rites were, by Jake's upbringing, private affairs, and she preferred to make her devotions away from the interruptions and appraisals of others. Here, atop the crenellated wall of Fort Falk, Jakes could pray, free of intrusions from soldiers, cooks, mechanics, priests, or warcasters. Jakes removed the leather cord she wore beneath her simple tunic and looked at the small medallion hanging from it. Not much larger than a copper farthing, the medallion was crudely stamped with the image of an outstretched palm receiving a coin. It was the symbol of Ascendant Rowan, a noble who half a millennium before had sacrificed her wealth and ultimately her life to ease the suffering of the poor and downtrodden. She placed the medallion in her right palm and wrapped the cord around her hand, binding it in place. Resting on her knees, she held her right hand in her left and dipped the tips of her fingers into the shallow clay vessel of lily-scented oil she had brought. As she brought her hands toward her face, she paused to watch the oil drip down her fingers and over the face of the medallion. "His memory we protect," she said softly, touching her fingertips to her forehead. "His soul we surrender," she continued, placing her folded hands over her heart. "Gentle Rowan, light his path and ease his burden, that his crossing may be safe and swift. Shield his passage, bless him, and guide him to the eternity of Morrow's radiance." Extending her arms, she raised her open palms to the sky. "This we humbly ask of thee, gentle Rowan, while we endeavor to honor those who crossed before us." Finally, Jakes closed her eyes and touched the medallion to her lips, hanging her head in quiet reflection. It was then that she felt the tingle along her spine, alerting her to the presence of another who shared her gift. She did not have to look to know it was Sturgis. One usually invokes the name of Katrina or Marcus with the crossing, not the patron of paupers, Sturgis said, no judgment implied in his tone. Jakes rubbed the oil off the medallion and looped the cord around her neck once more. "Katrina and Marcus watch over knights and soldiers, not paupers." "Who was he to you?" Sturgis asked. She glanced at him, noting that he held an official-looking sheaf of papers. As she had expected, they were being deployed. What she hadn't expected was for it to be so urgent he'd searched the fortress for her personally. "I didn't know him," she finally said. "He was just a boy, a street urchin from the slums in Caspia. I'd never seen him before."
"You pray for him often?"
Jakes nodded. "Every day."
"That sounds more like penance."
She gazed out past the battlements, watching the crimson orb of the sun slowly melt over the uneven horizon.
"A building had caught fire. I saw him trapped in the cellar and struggling to squeeze through a barred window, but the fire brigade was only concerned with preventing the flames from spreading to the merchant district. He was crying, pleading for help, and they just ignored him."
"You didn't."
"I stole one of their labor jacks. I'd had lessons in Arcana. I'd even practiced with a steam jack a couple times."
She clenched her eyes shut, recalling the memories all too vividly.
I thought I could help him. I thought I could control the jack. It could have ripped away those bars so easily.
I understand now, Sturgis said solemnly.
He stepped to the battlements and stood beside her. Close enough, Jakes could feel the heat emanating from the arcane turbine on the back of his armor.
But you must understand that his death is not on your hands.
Her response was only silence.
Sturgis hung his head. He spoke gravely, clearly no stranger to such loss.
Allison, when you go to battle, soldiers under your command will die. You must know this.
If I'm good enough, if I'm perfect at what I do, maybe there will be fewer.
We are at war. Will you punish yourself for every death?
She turned to face him, searching his eyes for an answer that could extinguish the turmoil within her. Her trust in his guidance was absolute. His wisdom would be her confidence.
What do you do?
He stared back at her, his eyes slightly distant. Behind that thin veil was pain, but he would not allow such emotions to surface. Finally, he placed the folded clutch of documents into her hand and walked out the way he had come.
We march at dawn.
Jakes crept through the ravine, careful to keep her head low as she moved between concealing boulders and scrub brush. One of the greatest assets afforded a warcaster was the Mechanica armor that enshrouded the wearer with a powerful ablative power field.
But that same armor could also be a bane when stealth was required, for the steam turbine that powered the field constantly emitted smoke from its coal-burning furnace.
In her attempt to evade the Protectorate forces, Jakes had cut the power to the turbine. It was a risky gambit, as cycling up the turbine took several seconds, and during that time she'd be far more vulnerable to attacks than normal. Powering down also produced a greater disadvantage. The armor became an intolerable burden. In addition to creating the invisible shield and sending additional power to the armor's arms and legs, the arcane turbine offset the great weight of the armor and allowed the warcaster to move as if wearing no armor at all.
Though Jakes's armor was light compared to that preferred by some veteran warcasters, the still substantial load hindered her movements, slowing her speed and reflexes. The alternative, however, was to advertise her exact location to the small horde of bloodthirsty zealots currently searching for her corpse. The Judicator had lumbered on ahead, setting the pace for the Protectorate reserves. It appeared to be taking a route that, although circuitous, would perfectly position their forces to ambush the Signarin artillery on the other side of the crags. Unable to return the way she had come, and blocked by the advancing reserve force, Jakes could only stay out of sight and hope for an opportunity to get a warning to her countrymen. As she crouched behind a tangle of dried brambles, the hairs on the back of her neck began to stand up, one by one, until her whole spine tingled with the unmistakable sensation of a warcaster nearby. Peering through the thicket, Jakes could see a lustrous glow moving through the canyon. At the center of the light was a young woman, no older than Jakes, bedecked in magnificent armor and flowing garments of white and gold. In one arm she cradled the shaft of a billowing pennant bearing a menophix, the crest of Menoth, creator of man. In her other hand she held the source of her illumination, a golden sword radiating with holy light. Seeing this woman was enough to take Jake's breath away, even more so because she hovered above the shoulders of her followers, bound to the earth by a trio of robed acolytes pulling chains tethered to her waist. Jakes had heard of this young woman, a mysterious prophetess known throughout the Iron Kingdoms as the Harbinger of Menoth. Though a white cloth masked her eyes, the Harbinger was said to possess miraculous vision, and her followers believed that she spoke directly to their god, Menoth. Gazing upon her was to behold the will of the Creator incarnate, and her mere presence had converted entire villages to follow the Menite faith. She was the beating heart of the Northern Crusade, and though Jakes had been raised under a different creed, to her the Harbinger was a vision of pure perfection. The Harbinger was thought by Signar's military intelligence to be occupied with expeditions in Lael. That she was here now was a disastrous turn of events. How could Jakes hope to survive an encounter with such a supreme force, much less excel as a warcaster at all? The girl had already led armies to victories against insurmountable odds. Jakes couldn't even lead a handful of men through a canyon without getting lost. Jakes's spirits crumbled as she contemplated her complete lack of options. Her hopeless situation had become impossible. Her failure would end in tragedy. Yet despite her Morrowind upbringing, she still felt the draw of the divinity before her. She could not deny the wonder of this girl, unbound to the earth by the glory of her god. She could not shake the tingling down her spine and the sensation of being in the presence of such unfathomable power. And then, Jakes realized that if she could sense the Harbinger could surely sense her too. As though to confirm this, the Harbinger suddenly raised her sword and from over 30 yards away leveled it directly at the thicket obscuring Jakes from view. The sword blazed with brilliant light, and the collective eyes of the zealot mob turned toward Jakes's location. The mob surged forward with their bombs and flails in hand, shouting. Jake struggled to her feet under the weight of her armor and ran along the edge of the canyon, searching for any cover that might shield her. She flipped a concealed switch on the side of her chest plate and ignited the furnace on her back. Instantly, the steam turbine began to pressurize, invigorating the arcane turbine with rapid chugs. Electric blue tendrils crackled around her as the rune plate sealed between layers of steel armor conducted her arcane energy and slowly formed the invisible shield around her. But still, the weight of the armor made her muscles in her legs quiver in pain, and she winced with every stride. Fire exploded in the canyon as the bombs of overeager zealots were flung too soon and fell far short of her. As she willed the muscle fatigue from her mind, Jakes felt the tug on the edge of her consciousness, like a thread being pulled at the hem of a shirt. 3 heartbeats later, she felt it again, stronger but still fleeting. It was Bunker. The warjack was somewhere nearby. Jakes glanced around as she continued her sluggish flight, but the tall boulders and sheer canyon walls blocked her view. The ironclad was nowhere in sight, and she couldn't hold the connection in her mind long enough to determine its direction. She nearly stumbled into a zealot who sprang from behind a jagged spire of rock, swinging his mace with a vengeful wail. Unable to dodge under the load of her armor, Jakes twisted clumsily, taking the impact of the mace across her back. The crude weapon glanced off the hardened steel but sent her plowing into the baked earth. She rolled to her side and brought her hand cannon to bear, just as the zealot swung the mace over his head to strike her. Then his chest exploded beneath white robes and the force of a grape-sized slug hurtled him backward against the spire, painting the rocks in a swath of red. Clambering to her feet, Jakes holstered the pistol and drew her blades. Her arcane turbine was spinning at full speed now, and every step felt lighter than the one before. More zealots jumped into her path, but she sliced through them easily without slowing her pace now that she was freed from the armor's load. All this time, she searched with her mind for the ironclad. Its presence flickered on the periphery of her awareness, but for all her concentration, she could not lock it down. A pair of shots rang out above her head, demanding her attention. The Protectorate employed few firearms. Signarans must be close by. Then she spotted them. Racing along the rim of the canyon above her was her squad of trenchers and the white-topped Stormsmith. Moving in a leapfrog pattern, the trenchers ran along the cliff edge, 2 at a time, stopping the fire on the zealots. Though few of the hasty shots found their mark, the zealots slowed their advance, allowing Jakes to increase her distance from them. The trenchers' rifles outranged the hand-thrown zealot bombs, so Jakes felt momentarily secure in the safety of her squad. Though the Judicator loomed ahead, she continued to run in the direction of its movement, hoping to find a pathway up the cliff that would reunite her with her squad. Too late, she realized the zealots were falling back, staying out of the effective range of the trencher fire. The reason quickly became clear as a pair of light Protectorate warjacks loped toward her from behind their ranks. The first, a Revenger, carried a long halberd and a hefty mechanical shield, energized with an arcane force that could repel any attacker that struck it. Like the Lancer she had trained against, the Revenger was also equipped with an arc node, reverse-engineered by Protectorate mechanics, which made the threat of arcane attacks difficult to predict. Several paces behind the Revenger trailed a Repenter, nearly identical in design, but armed with a wicked flail in its right hand and a smoking flamethrower in place of its left arm. Realizing she couldn't outrun the onrushing warjacks, Jakes braced herself for the Revenger's attack, hoping to use it to screen herself from the other warjack's flamethrower. A scant few feet separated the Revenger from her, yet its attack didn't come. It was as if the warjack had stopped short before crossing some invisible line. The edge of the Harbinger's control range! Looking past the jack, Jake saw the Harbinger safely outside the effective reach of the trencher's weapons. Glowing runes appeared, encircling the young woman as she arched her back and turned her face to the sky. Jake couldn't interpret the runes, but she knew the Harbinger was weaving a spell. A gout of flame burst from the Repenter's flamethrower as it rushed to the side of its companion Jack. A moment later, the arc node atop the Revenger pulsed with light. Jake took evasive maneuvers, dashing to one side and diving to the ground. She rolled over her left shoulder to right herself in the crevice between the base of the cliff and a large boulder, covering herself from the forthcoming attacks. On the ridge above her, Wally sighted through his scope at the Harbinger.
"I got you covered, ma'am," he called.
Her back pressed against the boulder, Jake's peeked around the edge ever so slightly. The Repenter unleashed a short burst of flame but halted at the limit of its master's control, still just out of range to threaten Jake's. She could see the arc node on the Revenger's back flare with mechanical light, and the air before it distort with rippling waves of heat. What effect that might produce was unknown to her. The Revenger wasn't looking toward her, though. It was holding position and staring at the young sniper above her.
"Wally! No! Get back!"
Jake shouted, waving her arms at him. Before Wally could pull the trigger, a beam of light projected through the Revenger's arc node, and the trenchers cried out, recoiling. Jake gasped as Wally dropped his rifle and arched backward, engulfed in holy light. Racked with pain, the boy opened his mouth in a silent scream as he pitched over the edge of the cliff toward her. Jake couldn't maneuver in the tight crack between the rocks. She put up her hands, as much to cushion his fall as to protect herself from his impact. Wally's corpse crushed the wind out of her lungs. Jake choked, sucking air sharply as she raised the boy's head between her hands. His face was a frozen mask of agony, his eyes blasted completely white by the Harbinger's devastating spell.
"Morrow, no,"
Jake sputtered, tears trickling down her dirt-smeared cheeks. The Protectorate warjacks on the other side of the boulder began to advance. Two pairs of mechanized feet stomped toward her. Despite being small for warjacks, they shook the earth beneath Jake's with every step they took. She heard the flamethrower of the Repenter open up with a roar. The air around her heated instantly and flames licked around the edges of the boulder. Trapped in the crevice, Jake's knew she had failed. She had led courageous men to their demise. Her countrymen would be destroyed at the hands of the merciless Protectorate fanatics, and Signar would crumble beneath the might of their relentless crusade. She steeled herself for the pain to come, and silently prayed Morrow would find her soul after she crossed. And then her senses exploded with a euphoric rush of heightened awareness. She was outside her body, watching the Repenter circle around the sheltering boulder as it disgorged its flaming essence into the crevice. She could see the Revenger just beyond, readying its halberd to strike her should she emerge from the cover. But what she felt was power. She felt an inferno raging within a swelling furnace, hydraulic pistons pumping iron legs, and the mass of an unstoppable force bearing down on its target. Bunker had found her, and their connection ignited her will to persevere. Instinctively, she focused on the arcane turbine at her back, overboosting the force field that surrounded her. She rolled to her side, clutching Wally's body in front of her as a barricade against the flames that now billowed into the crevice. Splitting her focus between her shield and the ironclad, she willed the warjack forward into a dead run, mentally adjusting its vector as it charged toward her attackers. Jake could smell singed leather and burning flesh as the clamor of the approaching ironclad filled her ears. She looked through its eyes, then lowered its left shoulder, and aimed for the unwary Revenger.
The impact sounded like a train wreck. Slammed off its feet, the Revenger catapulted forward and collided with the Repenter. Both jacks crashed into the boulder, resulting in a twisted, mangled heap of hydraulics and armor plating. Jake slid out from beneath the dead soldier as Bunker followed its assault with a series of crushing hammer blows energized by her focus. But the Harbinger was on the move, and again the mob of zealots surged toward her position. A familiar voice broke through the commotion. "Lieutenant! Up ahead! A path!" Jake's looked up to see Sergeant Hollings on the ridge above, urgently waving her further into the canyon toward the lumbering Judicator, which still advanced on its objective. She set off at a sprint, commanding Bunker to follow. Fleet-footed zealots intercepted them, but their uncoordinated attacks posed little obstacle to Jake's or the ironclad. Flashing blades and hammer strikes deflected the attackers from their path, and soon Jake saw Hollings and the rest of her squad dug in around the ramp of baked earth that had formed through centuries of rain erosion. Rifle shots whizzed past her, holding back the pursuing zealots as she and Bunker climbed the ramp to rejoin the squad. Smoke grenades rattled down the slope behind them, bursting into a curtain of white haze that further masked their retreat from the Protectorate forces.
"We thought you was goners, Lieutenant,"
Hollings said gravely, extending his hand to help her up the steep embankment.
"Wally,"
she started, without knowing what she might say next.
"He did what he had to, ma'am,"
Hollings said, cutting her off and quickly leading her away from the ridge.
"Up here now. We found the path that will make it hard for them candles to follow."
Jake nodded in agreement, promising herself they'd return for Wally's body when they could. The boy deserved a proper burial, and that she could give him. The squad filed into the narrow ravine with Bunker warily protecting them from any enemies bold enough to give chase. Once he was confident there were no pursuing zealots to contend with, Hollings took up his position next to Jake's as the squad pushed farther into the twisting notch in the rocky landscape.
"I'm sorry we botched it all, Lieutenant. Who could have known they was marching a colossal on us?"
Jake's hiked through the ravine with purpose now. She wasn't fleeing anymore. She was moving toward an objective. "Sergeant, do you know where this path goes?" He shrugged under the bulky shoulder plates of his reinforced coat.
"Not as such, but I reckon it's roughly in the direction of the crossing."
He was no more finished with his sentence when Jake spotted twin columns of black smoke over the rock wall of the ravine. "Bunker, give me a boost." Trenchers squeezed against the walls to make way for the ironclad to get to her. The ironclad bent forward and extended an open hand. Jake stepped onto the oversized palm, gaining enough elevation to see over the edge of the ravine. Not 100 yards away, the Judicator continued through the winding pass toward a hill that would give it a clear firing position on the unwary Signarin artillery.
"You got a notion of some sort, Lieutenant?"
Hollings asked. "We've got minutes at best. We need to move," she replied, hopping down from Bunker's improvised platform.
"We couldn't possibly get word to the commander in time," Hollings said hopelessly.
Jake shook her head. "We just need to stall it."
"That colossal?"
a trencher piped up incredulously. Barnes hadn't said a word since Jake's assumed command of the squad, but he seemed to suddenly find his voice.
"Then we already failed, Lieutenant."
"Exactly," Jake's replied, continuing through the ravine as it climbed upward. "So we already know the worst that can happen if we don't stop it." She halted quickly to face Barnes and the rest of the squad. "But I'd rather fail again than know I didn't try." Hollings jogged after her as Jake's quickened her pace.
"You have a plan you want to share with us, ma'am?"
Jake stared ahead, her expression resolute. "Thunder follows lightning." Whisker beamed, twitching ever so slightly as he raised his lightning rod above his head.
"A striking plan, indeed."
The Quadrangle was alive with pre-deployment activity as Jake's exited the officer's briefing. Sturgis had just finished presenting the strategic plan for the forthcoming attack on the Protectorate supply column to the Northern Crusade. In just 3 days, Jake's would experience her first major engagement. With their various operational roles assigned, the dozens of officers of Sturgis's 29th Brigade spread out through the fort to complete equipment requisitions and ready the force to move out. As a journeyman warcaster, Jake's was not attached to a specific platoon, but instead reported directly to her Warcaster mentor, which left her available to oversee any task or action he might assign her during the operation. This also meant her current responsibilities were light compared to most other officers, her only obligation being the preparation of her warjack and her personal kit.
"Lieutenant Jakes," she heard Sturgis call out behind her.
Most of her time with the commander was spent alone or with no audience other than the warjacks, so it was always unexpected when he addressed her formally. He only recognized her rank in the presence of other soldiers and officers, or when he had a particularly stern lesson to impart. She spun on her heel, replying with the proper etiquette, "Yes, Commander?"
"Come with me," he said. "I have something I want to show you."
Minutes later, Jakes found herself standing in the middle of the sparring circle, with Bunker and the Centurion facing each other from opposite ends. The peculiar timing for a lesson was disconcerting enough, but the fact that she was weaponless and without her armor troubled her greatly. Her officer's uniform was certainly not designed for combat training.
"I wanted to show you this sooner, Allison," Sturgis finally explained, "but you needed to develop your instinct for maintaining your bond with a warjack first."
Jakes watched as Sturgis held out his hand and closed his eyes in concentration. Rings of luminescent runes materialized above his open palm, rotating like interlocking gears. This was the arcane formula of a spell, an image projected by the mind of a spellcaster as he focused his will and summoned his magic. Like mathematic equations written on a chalkboard, the runes presented a solution for harnessing arcane energy and forming it into a special effect. Jakes concentrated on the runes, digesting their complex pattern, and held the image in her own mind until she could reproduce the projection in her own hand. "It makes the warjack unmovable?" she asked finally, still parsing the subtle intricacies of the formula.
"I haven't racked this spell in a very long time," Sturgis said, referring to the practice of staying proficient in a specific combination of spells that could be called upon at a moment's notice.
A warcaster could stay battle-ready with only a limited number of spells at any one time, depending on the strength of their will, and were known to specialize in certain spells that they found effective in combat.
"But it may serve you well."
Jakes frowned. "It certainly would have helped yesterday when you decided to jump into the ring," she said. "I wouldn't have let Bunker get away from me."
"Practice it," he replied. "With whatever time you have between now and the mission, learn this spell."
For several minutes, Jakes gazed at the rotating runes, studying their mystical meanings and unique combination until she comprehended the formula. Finally, she closed her palm and the rune circles evaporated. A moment later, the same runes exploded around her, larger and more intense. With sufficient practice, she knew she could do it much more quickly. She looked at Sturgis with a cagey smile. "All right, let's try it." The circle of runes expanded until it included the ironclad, silently awaiting its orders. "Give me your best shot." Sturgis nodded. At his silent command, the Centurion belched flame from its exhaust stacks, lowering its head, and charged. Lungs burning, heart pumping in his chest, Whisker raced over the high ground of the crag as fast as his legs could carry him. Well accustomed to rapid deployments and the short sprints called for in typical battle maneuvers, Stormcallers were rarely put on the front line, so endurance was not a requisite proficiency for the profession. It was a detail for which he would be generally thankful on any day but today. Nonetheless, Whisker denied the exhaustion threatening to overcome him and pushed on over the treacherous terrain. From his vantage atop the cliffs, he could see the Judicator no more than 30 yards to his right, marching on its parallel course toward the Signaran army. Fortunately, the Colossal's forward-mounted head had not risen above the ridgeline, and it remained unaware of Whisker's proximity. Even so, the Stormcaller kept a wary eye on the rocket pods, just in case the sealed ports began to open. Though ponderously slow, the Judicator had a good head start on Whisker, and the rough ground atop the crags made overtaking the giant warjack all the more difficult. Had Whisker only needed to outpace the Judicator, his path would have proven much easier, but the Tech Smith's objective was to head it off, hopefully without the Colossal spotting him. As he neared the Judicator, Whisker wondered if it possessed the same heavy shielding around its cortex as Signarin Colossal-class warjacks. Unlike their smaller counterparts, Signar's Colossals were engineered so that the fragile nerve center was encased within multiple layers of protection that made the jack invulnerable to the disruptive side effects of Whisker's weapons. By calling down a bolt of lightning on a standard warjack, he could momentarily interrupt the connection between the jack and its controlling warcaster. This was highly useful for diminishing the effectiveness of enemy warjacks, but it was useless against Signar's mighty stormwall, and he expected it would be useless against the Judicator as well. Still, he itched to send a bolt its way, just to see what would happen. His lightning rod hummed in his hand, and he imagined it too felt the urge to direct the strike onto the massive jack. After all, it had been quite a while, several minutes at least, since he'd last felt the tingle, and one quick storm wouldn't take that long to gather. Whisker twitched a little with the sensation of electricity running down his spine, and his thumb inched toward the switch on his lightning rod. But Jake's words stuck in his mind, "Every second is precious," and he stuck to the plan. Soon enough, he would bring the lightning. Holling slowly peeked over a rocky embankment that sloped down toward the gulch the Judicator had just passed through. Behind it, the Harbinger and her host of zealots moved cautiously, alert for the reappearance of the Signarans. Glancing left and right, he confirmed that the rest of his men were in place, then slowly brought his rifle to bear, bracing it against a small boulder. They had doubled back behind the Protectorate reserves and now faced the rear of the column, the last place the larger force would expect opposition. At least he hoped so. It was hard to keep his eyes off the Harbinger with her glow like a summer sunrise and the sparkling gold on her armor that shone in the light. As much as he loathed the Menites and their merciless, self-righteous crusade, that delicate lass, too divine to touch her toes to the ground, didn't look like any enemy he'd ever faced. But she was the enemy, and the mob of rancorous fanatics surrounding her wouldn't let him forget it. Sighting down the barrel, Hollings lined up a shot on the closest zealot and squeezed the trigger. His rifle popped and the zealot pitched forward. Before the fanatic hit the ground, 8 more of Hollings' boys fired into the mob, scattering the zealots and forcing them to confront their ambushers. Quickly, the trenchers reloaded their single-shot rifles, pushing rounds into the breaches and locking the barrels before lining up another shot. Hollings was the third to fire in the second volley. "Not bad for an old gravedigger," he thought to himself, breaking open the rifle to shove another round in. The withering fire was taking its toll on the mob of zealots, but they still outnumbered the trenchers significantly. Commanding her acolyte attendants to face the attackers, the Harbinger raised her pennant high and pointed her sword toward the trenchers. Glowing yellow runes exploded around her, rotating as she summoned arcane energy and formed it into a magic spell. The runes evaporated, transferring their glow to the crude maces held by each of the zealots surrounding her. A second burst of runes spread out from her to pass through the mob. The eyes of each fanatic sparked briefly before the zealots charged the trenchers as one.
"Fall back!"
Hollings ordered, reserving the round he had just loaded into his rifle.
"Fall back!"
One by one, the trenchers retreated from their position, attempting to evade the oncoming assault. Invigorated by the Harbinger's magic, the zealots covered the ground with startling speed. They struck with expert accuracy, guided by the enchantment. Hollings' chest tightened as he saw Morrison and Baker overwhelmed, each succumbing to multiple attackers. Barnes fought back, stabbing with his bayonet as he backpedaled from a pair of zealots flailing at him. A precision swing swept him off his feet, but before the zealots could leap on top of him, Hollings brought his rifle to bear and shot one dead, evening the odds. Barnes followed with a slash of his bayonet. It wasn't an effective way to use such a weapon, but it was enough to drive the second zealot back and buy himself enough space to regain his feet. The zealots continued to come at them, but the Harbinger held her position. As Hollings and his men repeated their strategy of fire and retreat, they lured the enraged zealots beyond her ability to effectively command and support them.
Come on now, lass. Take the bait,
Hollings uttered under his breath, plugging another round into his rifle. The gunfire was Jake's signal to move.
Fire it up, big guy, she said to Bunker, at the same time mentally commanding the Warjack to stoke its furnace to capacity. She'd been holding it in position on a low idle to suppress its exhaust while they hid from the advancing Judicator. Now it was time to open it up. Flames belched from the twin stacks on the ironclad's back, and steam vented from its grill, indicating its eagerness to do battle. Warjacks weren't just built for combat, they craved it, no matter the odds. Jake's nodded to Bunker, and the two of them scrambled over the rocky ridge. Just ahead, she spotted Whisker running at full speed as she and Bunker slid down the slope into the gulch right behind the Judicator. The Colossal was instantly aware of their presence and quickly rotated to confront them, both flamethrowers spewing jets of fire that scorched a thick crescent of earth. Anticipating this reaction, Jake's and Bunker were already running around the other side of the Judicator, forcing it to turn in a full circle.
"You know we're going to get killed, right?"
she called out to the ironclad as they backed away from the Judicator, drawing it through the gulch toward its original destination. Bunker clanked in agreement as it positioned itself protectively in front of her. Looking past the ironclad and the great colossal beyond it, Jake's could see the Harbinger and her swarm of zealots further down the gorge, preoccupied with the ambushing trenchers. The Judicator lurched forward and blasted the ground before them with its flamethrowers. Though they kept their distance, the flames reached just far enough to splash over Bunker, charring the raised surfaces of its armor. Unable to feel pain, the mechanical ironclad registered the damage as merely superficial. As Jake's hoped, the Judicator appeared to be preserving its payload of rockets for other targets and hadn't yet opened the ports on the massive shoulder-mounted pods.
"Just give it a little more space, Bunker," she said to the Warjack, shielding her eyes from the blazing inferno. "Keep it coming this way."
Then the Judicator stopped. Fire erupted from the twin rows of exhaust stacks on its back, and steam burst furiously from vents throughout the Colossal's hydraulic system.
"Oh, hell! It's going to charge!"
Jake shouted, trying to assess the best way to dodge the towering construct in the narrow canyon. But then it took a step back.
"Damn it! She's reining it in!"
Jake's yelled, just as the Judicator took another tentative step backward. Farther down the gulch, Jake's could see the Harbinger moving toward the retreating trenchers.
"We've got to stop it!"
Spurring Bunker forward, Jake's took off at a sprint. Splitting up to circle around the opposite sides of the Judicator, they managed to take it off guard just long enough to avoid the flamethrowers. As she ran, glowing blue runes flared around her as she focused a spell into existence. It was the spell Sturgis had shown her only 3 nights before, and at his directive, she had spent every spare moment perfecting her ability to cast it. Focusing her will, the circle of runes grew larger, spreading out to encompass Bunker as the Warjack rejoined Jake's on the other side of the Judicator. A faint blue nimbus surrounded them both, connected by a barely visible cord of light. "Steady now," she said, sticking close to the ironclad while keeping it positioned between herself and the Colossal. "It's about to get rough." The Judicator wheeled and swiped at Bunker, but the spell heightened the ironclad's reflexes and it deftly ducked the Colossal's wrecking ball-sized fist. Bunker counterattacked with a combination of hammer and fist attacks. Every blow landed true, rending armor from the Judicator's massive legs. But even energized by Jake's focus, the ironclad could not cause enough damage to affect the Colossal's performance. Roaring mechanically, the Judicator surged forward in an attempt to push through the ironclad, but the arcane power of Jake's enchantment held Bunker in place. In the narrow gorge, the Judicator had no room to maneuver around them and was held fast, blocked by the unmovable ironclad. Blazing light flared in the Judicator's eyes, and Jake's knew the Harbinger was focusing on the enormous Warjack. Stretched between controlling the Judicator and protecting her zealots, she had to guide the Colossal back to her or risk interrupting her connection with it. This is what Jake's was counting on.
There was no hope of defeating the Titanic machine, but if she could separate the Judicator from its controller, she might stall it long enough to get a warning to Sturgis.
"I'm sorry, Bunker. This is going to hurt," Jake said, cringing as she saw a wave of energy ripple down the Judicator's arm.
The ironclad turned its right shoulder into the energized strike just as the Colossal's 5-ton fist crashed into it. Metal rent and caved under the crushing blow, contorting Bunker's right arm into